Welcome, everyone. Welcome to What's Working. Thank you so much for tuning in. My name is Cam Marston. What's Working is the radio show and the podcast that focuses on workplace, workforce, and marketplace trends. Our goals, as always, is to find people that can talk about the trends influencing their business, their industry, and discuss them with me in such a way that you and I, even in different businesses or different industries, can somehow learn from what these trends are teaching our guests. I try to find people who can talk well about what's going on in their world, and I can say, ooh, that's an idea I can use. And perhaps today's guest will help accelerate you. Apparently, this is the magic of this radio show. I learn about these businesses that I never would have guessed are out there. People hear the show and they say, you know who you'd find interesting, Cam? You'd find this person interesting or this business interesting. And that's exactly the story of today's guest. I'll tell you a little bit more about that in a moment. But there seems to have been a strong theme on What's Working recently about food and food products. We've had a handful of people recently that are makers. You know, we had Tony Tejas and his salsa not long ago. We've had just a variety of, it seems like, food. Joey Mason with Mason Hills Farms not long ago. Food. Anyway, it was one of these food guys. In fact, he was a guest in the past named Billy Stitt, Billy's Bacon. And here is an unpaid plug. If you fancy bacon, folks, I want you to go find Billy's Bacon. And if you're not in the Mobile, Alabama area, you can go to goldbelly.com and find Billy's. And it's so good. And I find some of these products anyway and just become in love with them and want to see their creators successful. And I want you, if you consider yourself a bacon lover, to go find Billy's Bacon. It was Billy Stitt of Billy's Bacon who sent me the name of a lady named Lauren Fernandez. Her company is called Full Course, and she is the CEO of Full Course. As I'm reading her bio and a little bit of information, and there's an article about her in the National Restaurant News that I was able to find online, what they do is I don't know if the term is an incubator, but they find small restaurants, one, two, three, maybe as many five outlets for one restaurant. And they work with the restaurateur to essentially throw kerosene on their idea, amplify the idea, get it up to a very fast pace through investing in it, and then pretty it up, get it ready for the marketplace for private equity to come in and take hold, to get involved in it. And Lauren is the CEO of this company, and again, it's called Full Course. She has an ability to spot a restaurant that has this capability of ramping up. And her background includes lots of restaurant management and ownership herself, so she's not coming at it from the outside. And I'm really curious to learn from her what are the elements that when she walks into a restaurant, she can say, yes, this one's got what it takes to be ramped up, to throw fuel on this fire so that private equity can come in, make an investment, and get involved. I'm curious of what her eye sees as she goes through the door or what she listens for when she speaks to a restaurateur about their growth plans. This is all very interesting to me. And my suspicion is that what she sees and what she listens for can be applied in one way or another to your and my businesses, to what it is that we do. So, while her examples may be very specific, I'm expecting some generalities that we'll be able to utilize. Again, when we come back from break, you and I are going to meet Lauren Fernandez. She'll be on the other side of a Zoom call, not sure where she's calling in from, but talking about her remarkable skill of being able to identify budding restaurant concepts. Let's call it that. You can find What's Working at your favorite podcast link. Go to What's Working or go to whatsworkingcam.com. We'll be right back after this break with Lauren Fernandez. You're listening to What's Working.
Mm-hmm. This is Seth Cherniak, Vice President of Branch Development for the Jeffrey Matthews Financial Group. If you're an experienced financial advisor wanting the freedom of independence but aren't sure making that jump is right for you, we should talk. Jeffrey Matthews has developed a successful program for advisors who don't want to be 1099 contractors and don't want to pay for their own overhead. We're looking for advisors who want the freedom to run their business the way they see fit with the support that comes with a W-2 firm. If you're interested in joining one of our branches, or if you want to open your own branch as a full-time employee, let's chat. Our compensation plan is one of the most competitive among all W-2 firms, big or small. Reach out to us today at jeffreymatthews.com, connect with me, Seth Cherniak, on LinkedIn, or click the link in the podcast.
Jeffrey Matthews Financial Group, member FINRA, SIPC.
We're back. You're listening to What's Working. Thank you so much for joining us on this week's show. The guest on the other side of a Zoom call from me is Lauren Fernandez. She's the CEO of a company called Full Course, based out of Atlanta, Georgia. We're going to get into the weeds and what it is that she does in a moment. Her bio is, as often people like this are, full of superlatives. But rather than me read it, Lauren, I'm going to ask you to introduce yourself. First and foremost, though, thank you so much for your time and welcome to What's Working.
Hey, thanks so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
Tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and what it is you're doing today.
Sure, happy to do that. So I am an attorney, first and foremost. I have a JD MBA from Emory University. I've spent about 20 years specializing in product development and commercialization. For a large part of my career, I worked in private practice, and then I worked for pharma. I worked for Big Pharma under the flag of Novartis in their eye care division. And one day I got a call to jump over to Focus Brands. And so I made the leap from pharma to food, which I think is probably a little bit more aligned with who I am as a person and just my sincere and deep love for connecting with people. The biggest change for me in my career going from pharmaceuticals to food was a closer connection to the end user and the customer, which I think is super important for me as a business person. I was at Focus Brands for a little over 3 years, I believe, and I was there to help establish their licensing program. We leveraged a lot of our brands, not just only in franchising, but into consumer packaged goods opportunities, wholesale opportunities, B2B. And when I left there, I became a franchisee myself. So I took a full
time. That's part of your bio that I thought, now this woman is legit. She's been in the weeds. Keep going on that. This is interesting.
Well, I think one thing that I will say about that is that when you are a female in leadership in an industry that is predominantly male, it's not just enough, unfortunately, to have the 2-3 degrees on the wall and to have that level of expertise. I needed operations experience. So I had some seed capital and I was very fortunate and I was able to reinvest in myself, really, and go get myself that operations experience. I created the opportunity that I needed to go do that. I became a full-time operator and developer and co-founded a development firm with my partners and was in the field for 2.5+ years running chicken salad chick franchises. We bought 3 in our territory and rapidly developed 8 more over a period of 20 months. So I went from having 35 to 40 employees to having over 400 in a period of 2 years. It was insane.
Wow.
A lot of construction management, a lot of development skills, a lot of people development skills. And I am often quoted on this, and it's so important to highlight, is that field experience, that operations experience as an entrepreneur was as important to me as an education point as my previous 2 postgraduate degrees. And I really sincerely mean that. I sold those units. We successfully exited in 2018 and sold them back to the parent company and had a moment to stop and think. And this is actually something I heard in a presentation given by Ina Garten, the Barefoot Contessa, about steps she took in building her empire. So she sold the Barefoot Contessa restaurant.
Yeah.
And took a year off to support them in the transition, but had a lot of time to twiddle her thumbs and do whatever. And as part of her documenting the recipes for the new owners, realized that she had a chance to go ahead and leverage that into a cookbook because they were her intellectual property. And she quoted as to the audience that she never would have become the version of Barefoot Contessa we know now as the best-selling cookbook author and on TV had she not had that moment, that epiphany in the space in between the next thing, right? To think about what she really wanted to do next. So I made that space for myself. We sold our business. I told the whole world, I'm taking 3 months off.
Yeah.
I challenged myself to take 6 months off and I budgeted for a year. And I'm very proud of the fact that I actually took the year. But what I was really doing in the background was workshopping what is now full course. So I took an entire, I think actually a total of 18 months or more in stealth mode, fully researching, validating my hunches, and solving for some major industry problems that we have around capital, development expertise, how to grow your small business, and also investing in people and their education that ultimately, again, became the solution we now call Full Course 5 years later.
Yeah. So you go work with restaurateurs. And if I understand this correctly from the materials I was sent, help them scale this thing up quickly. Mm-hmm. In such a way that private equity will then come behind and scale it up even more quickly.
That's exactly right. So here are some of the problems that we solve for. We are at a top line. We are the industry's first and only incubator, accelerator, and investor in early stage restaurant and food brands. So we are there as your partner, whether it's unit one or unit seven, to help grow and scale the business using an equitable and very fair capital structure where we come in as a minority partner and provide growth capital. We provide development expertise where our team runs development, and that's growth in four major categories, which is very differentiated from other players in the market. So we look at growing brands across multiple segments. And to us, those four main buckets are company stores that we own and operate alongside you and support you in, franchising that we are expert in building out those systems and helping them excel and grow rapidly, product development and commercialization, which based on my background should be a no-brainer, right? And the last bucket is sort of licensing deals where we may partner with in a non-traditional capacity with an airport operator, stadiums and arenas, hospitals, colleges, and universities to place the brands where our customers are. And that's not just for brand awareness, but obviously a fourth revenue stream into the company. We also provide a tremendous amount of education, mentoring, coaching, and guidance. So in addition to field operations support and backstopping with best-in-class practices, we also have a nonprofit arm of our business that supports our founders, their employees, their franchisees, and their employees in personal and professional development in our industry. So it's really a chance for us to cultivate and nurture talent from within.
Are you finding these restaurants? Couple questions. Mm-hmm. No, I just lied. 1,000 questions. Number one, are you finding these restaurants or are they coming to you? Number two, are you dealing with food products or only food products that come out of restaurants?
Mm-hmm. So let's start with the products question because that's pretty straightforward. So yeah. I have a deep background in product development and commercialization. One of the ways that we make our restaurants more efficient and effective, we protect our intellectual property, i.e. confidential recipes. We
right.
create scalability, ease of labor, all kinds of good things as we manufacture some key products that are on the menu. Things that cause a bottleneck, not only in food costs, but in labor costs. So sauces, spice mixes. Sometimes it's a whole product. Sometimes it's just things that go into an end product, like a seasoning mix, right? That manufacturing element can lead not only to efficiencies in the restaurants themselves that we own and operate, but also in the franchise system as well. So yes, we do develop our own products and we do sometimes even sell them at retail or in wholesale, but their primary function is within our restaurant systems.
Understood.
First and foremost. We do actually invest in products. Indeed, one of our first investments was in a wholesale sausage and hot dog company called Frippers. It is the best hot dog I've ever had in my life. And I sit in the South in Atlanta, Georgia, and the South consumes 2 times as many hot dogs as any other region in the United States. And we don't have a Southern regional hot dog. I know the guy
that eats all those hot dogs. The averages are same nationwide, except for this one guy who blows the averages through the roof. I know him. His name is Chris Fuchs, and he eats all the hot dogs that give the data.
Of the top 10 consuming hot dog cities, I love Paducah, Kentucky is on that list. I just want to roll into Paducah, Kentucky and be like, what is happening here? Why are there so many hot dogs? But
what's the answer?
I digress. Yeah. We do actually, because of my background and experience in product, when we see wonderful opportunities like that in a phenomenal brand started by Colin, we have both Colin and Brandon, the chef. So it's Colin and Brandon both developed the recipes and kind of are out there doing their thing. But the scalability of that is unimaginable because you can make it center of plate in a restaurant. And suddenly an average restaurant with food costs of 35%, our cost is 15%.
Lauren Fernandez is the CEO of Full Course. You're listening to What's Working, and we will be right back.
This is Bill Eastet. I perfected my baking recipe behind my live music stage at my little restaurant in Fairhope, Alabama. We have custom-made smokers and small-batch bacon made just for you. So if you're looking for the best bacon in America that has been cured, smoked, and even serenaded by songwriters, you definitely need to try Billy's Small Batch Bacon. www.billysbacon.com.
Listening to What's Working. I'm Cam Marston. We're back. Lauren Fernandez is on the other side of a Zoom call with me. She's the CEO of Full Course out of Atlanta, Georgia. They are a, for lack of a better term, Lauren, an investment company that focuses on growing small independent restaurant brands into small chains and then larger chains and throwing kerosene on an already hot fire when they found something. Lauren, prior to the break, I asked the question, do the restaurants come find you? Or do you go and move around the city of Atlanta or wherever it is and say, oh, this is a good idea that can catch on? How does that work?
Yeah, it's a great question. So we get a lot of lead generation from referrals, actually. We're very connected in the industry, and a lot of our vendors and suppliers take advantage of our referral program. And we do pay commission on successful referrals. And part of that is also just people doing a good thing. And even if we're not right for them as their investor and developer, they like what we're doing and will send their friends our way. The restaurant community is incredibly tight. It's the third largest industry in the United States and contributes over 10% to our GDP. And you'd be shocked.
No kidding. Mm-hmm. That's a data piece I never would have guessed. That's amazing. Yep.
One of the largest employers in the United States, and indeed half of all Americans report their first job is in a restaurant. So just imagine that network rippling out. And I've been doing this publicly now for about 3 years as Full Course. And we are very intentional and purposeful in saying that we are operators first. We understand these struggles. We understand these journeys of a founder. And we are very out there as a different kind of investor. I think there's a lot of talk around value add, but we actually speak it and walk it, right? Our statements of work are very clear. We are going to do X for you. You are going to do Y. The capital is going to be used for Z. And we're going to invest in you and your team. And this is how we're going to build that out. We're going to invest in your education, invest in your mentorship, and grow the team out around you. You know, for that to be the message and to be emphatic about the fact that we are equal opportunity in the sense that we want to be representing in the investments we make more diverse and underrepresented founders. One of the things that happens is that purpose and that mission sort of exponentially spreads out into the restaurant community. It's such a novel way of thinking and honoring the various cultures that we have in the United States and honoring diversity. And a lot of that, frankly, is informed by my own journey. You know, I'm, you know, female and Hispanic. I'm first generation Cuban American in this country. In female and minority owned businesses got less than 3% of all venture capital last year. That's insane. You know, and look at the industry that I'm in. I'm Hispanic. We are 19% of the U.S. population. And in the restaurant industry, we are 28% of the workforce. And yet you don't see Hispanics leading restaurant brands, growing restaurant brands, investing in them. Why is that? Why are we not just doing the obvious thing and celebrating cultures and the type of representation that I think is just good business? As you look at the stats, female businesses outperform their male counterparts. Hispanic businesses outperform all counterparts. It's amazing. And furthermore, like, why not just give the customers what they want, right? There are so many amazing
There's always that. Yeah.
To me, it's just good business. I will respect, honor, and fund and found that hustle. Like, I want those founders and their hustle to get the money and the capital and the opportunity they need behind them and just let them go. Like, let's see what they can do. But fundamentally, like, you're really actually aligning your investment strategy against what the market is choosing to eat. 70% of all restaurants are single unit location. And the vast majority of those are actually independents that are representative culturally, right? Yeah. It's your favorite Jamaican place. It's your favorite Ethiopian restaurant. It's your local Mexican joint. And those brands are the ones that deserve the shot at scalability, where there's real reward financially for the founders. And nobody knows how to scale those brands, where to find them, or how to put the right capital structure behind them. And that's what we do. So we get a lot of inbound lead. A lot of it's inbound. I'll just say that. Like, and the short answer is they come to us. We see them occasionally and we reach out. Yes. But what's more important to us is that we get founders who want our help and that want our capital too. If they won't take the help and that is a condition of the capital, then they're probably not a good fit for us. So we do tend to lean towards inbound a little bit more.
What do you see? Imagine for me, you're walking into a restaurant and I would imagine there are telltale signs that say to you, yes, this one's ready for us to spray the kerosene on it, or this one's not. There's got to be some elements that you can spot early on that say, yeah, this is a good one for us to take off with versus another one being not so much.
I think the customer demand is just immediately apparent. If there's a high level of demand, and that is not just repeat visits, but fiercely loyal customers, that's an immediate flag that there's a clearly a market for this and they're onto something. We try to go in and see where founders have attempted to kind of create some scale, like what are their processes and procedures look like right now? And we don't say no, we just judge and evaluate as to how heavy a lift it's going to be for us. Like, is this a super heavy lift? Is it going to be a lighter lift? And those are factors that we take into consideration when we're evaluating an investment. One of the things that we do very differently too is we assess brands as they come in for potential investment, but we actually give feedback to the brands themselves, because I don't want to say no, not for us, or not for us right now. I want to give them a roadmap to what successful looks like. So we do take the time and energy to give them reports on what we think that could be.
Off the top of your head, if there's, let's say, restaurateurs listening anywhere in the nation, and they're thinking, I'd love to get my feet under me, for a lack of a better term, and be considered by any organization like your own, what is probably the one or two most common mistakes that they're making that would prevent their quick scalability?
Terrible accounting. Number one, get a restaurant specific accountant. Prepare yourself that it could cost $2,000 to $3,000 a month, but you will get that money back and then some. I see a lot of garbage accounting attempts to do accounting by firms that don't understand restaurant code. Use a standard chart of accounts for restaurants. Close your books regularly and keep really clean records. And I think outsourcing that entire function is usually the way to go for emerging restaurant brands. But I also caution them to get an accounting firm that understands restaurants. It's really? There are not too many out there, but it's really important, because you could garbage in, garbage out, right? Like, you could incorrectly code fry oil. I've actually seen fryer oil coded under office expense. Like, I'm not kidding you.
Yeah.
There is a code for oil under, but they mean like motor oil. It's not, right? If you need it to make the food, it is part of the food costs, right? If you need the oil to drop the fries in to serve the fries, it's a food cost. It should be calculated in. And so just that's one really easy example to give people. And so you need someone who understands where to code things. And if I can do a number two, like inventory, like understanding, like if you can do weekly to bi-monthly inventory, meaning every 2 weeks, then you will have a better understanding of what your actual food costs are. Tack on your, you know, labor and your paper and build pricing models that work for you and protect your profit margin. And I think a lot of restaurants, because that is such a manual process for so many restaurants, they skip it or their managers don't do it or do it right. And that is one of the biggest mistakes I see. And it should cost you nothing. Like, you can do a good sheet to shelf inventory guide that matches the shelf. So when you walk up to it, everything that's on the shelf is on one page and you mark the current volume. Hand that over to your accountant and let them do their job, right? So I think those are number one and two mistakes. I think the third mistake I see most commonly is the founder is wearing 17 different hats and they're decent at three and probably mediocre at the rest. And so there's ways to hand off fractional, you know, support, whether that's marketing, finance and accounting, whatever. You can give those responsibilities to a GM, but I definitely see that as a huge mistake too, founders keeping too much control.
Lauren, you've not mentioned one bit of this. It has to do with the food, the quality of the food, the customer interaction, marketing, presence, bathroom cleanliness. It's all about data and data tracking. And we'll get into that when we get back from this break a little bit. I want to know what you think about how this may apply to any other business. You're listening to What's Working. Lauren Fernandez is on the other side of a Zoom call.
This is Seth Cherniak, Vice President of Branch Development for the Jeffrey Mathews Financial Group. If you're an experienced financial advisor wanting the freedom of independence, but aren't sure making that jump is right for you, we should talk. Jeffrey Mathews has developed a successful program for advisors who don't want to be 1099 contractors and don't want to pay for their own overhead. We're looking for advisors who want the freedom to run their business the way they see fit with the support that comes with a W-2 firm. If you're interested in joining one of our branches, or if you want to open your own branch as a full-time employee, let's chat. Our compensation plan is one of the most competitive among all W-2 firms, big or small. Reach out to us today at jeffreymathews.com, connect with me, Seth Cherniak, on LinkedIn, or click the link in the podcast.
Jeffrey Mathews Financial Group, member FINRA, SIPC.
I'm Cam Marston. You're listening to What's Working. Lauren Fernandez is on the other side of a Zoom call with me. She's the CEO of a company called Full Course. And to use my very non-industry description of what it is that they do, they throw kerosene on a slow-burning flyer of restaurant brands to get them up to speed and explode quickly onto the marketplace. And Lauren, you told me about taking some time off to reflect on what it is that you wanted to do. What a glorious thing that you were able to do there. And we've had another guest on here that talked about the importance of that to creating their second chapter career. How much of what you're talking to me about here do you think applies to businesses across the range versus uniquely to the restaurant industry?
I think that's a great question. I'm a born entrepreneur and had my first business, real business, at 14. And so many of the things that I bring to the restaurant industry actually come from other industries. And so one thing that I would tell anybody who is interested in starting up their own business, jumping careers, is be very clear on what you need, right? Like, how much money do you actually have to make in a year? We call it the ramen noodles number. And I don't mean like delicious Jinya. I mean like cup of noodles. Like, what do you actually need? And what are the different layers in your life that you could live with or without to make that dream happen? What are the must-haves? What are you good at? Like, what are you really good at? And I don't mean the stuff that goes on your resume. I mean the things that you fundamentally, you wake up as a human in the morning and you're like, this is alignment for me because I'm doing what I'm exceptional at. And the third bucket is like what makes your heart sing. And I think for a lot of entrepreneurs, there's all this focus on chasing your passion. I'm very passionate about people and I love food, But there are a million jobs that I didn't go for or companies I did not stand up, because part of what I needed to do at this stage in my life was create some solutions that I saw as blocking for female founders, for underrepresented founders, for all these entrepreneurs who are crushing it in our industry, but don't have the right fuel for their growth. How do we solve for that? So this is me on the other side of success, turning around and building the bridge to make it better for the industry's future by investing in the people that I think help make that future look brighter. And that is without respect to them.
What are you good at?
Me? I'm a MacGyver, man. I'm a MacGyver.
You're a what?
I'm a MacGyver.
MacGyver. You know, I love it. There will be plenty of people who recognize that, but plenty of people who don't. So you're a MacGyver.
I'm a MacGyver. A dash of special forces with a ton of know-how. I am a marshaller of resources. You lock me in a room with a roll of duct tape and a paperclip, and I will build an airplane. Like, I am really good at motivating people, marshaling the resources, getting the plan together, and marching the troops in the direction. Where you choose to deploy that effort is really important, right? Because I could do that to anyone's benefit in a company if I still worked in a company. But me standing up my own business and creating solutions for our industry that I think will leave it way better than I found it, that for me is checking my passion box, right? That is our company's purpose. And I get to leverage all the things that I am good at. And that alignment is important. It's not alignment just to your passion, but it's alignment to who you naturally are as a person. And I've had that personality since birth. Just ask my parents.
Yeah. So how do you make money, Lauren? Do you charge a fee for the work that you do? Do you take a percentage of the what am I trying to say? Private equity investment?
So
what
we are private equity investors. So we have a capital side of our business that sits on the cap table of these businesses. We also sit on the cap table as the management company for a total investment structure of 49%. The management company also does take some nominal fees. Just to give you a ballpark, at most it's 5% of sales with a minimum floor of 7,000. But what's important to understand here is that's designed to scale with the business. You are getting over $3 million worth of services in value from our team and the level of support that we provide over a five-year investment period. So it's a very, very good deal to our investments, and it's designed to work with them and for them and create alignment between our team and the founder. So everyone at the table is an owner. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. When you approach one of these founders and owners, what is the biggest change that they need to be prepared for? Once they sign on, you're going to tell them, hey, MacGyver's running a big part of this show now, and here's what's about to happen. And what is the part that they're not prepared for?
Accountability.
Really?
It is so
hard. So they've been the
boss.
He or she been the boss, and suddenly they've got to answer to MacGyver.
It's MacGyver and a team of MacGyvers, right? It's a team. Yeah. Our team has over 200 years of industry experience. So we've been there and we've done that. So when we see the mistake happening, we're like, ooh, fire, put it out. Here's how you can put it out. And they go, I don't see a fire. I don't even smell smoke. We're like, no, fire, right? So yeah. I think that's the biggest struggle. And it will always be that way. And that's totally fair. I have a ton of empathy and understanding for that. But that will just be something that, you know, look, we screen early on for founders' receptiveness to our feedback. It's part of our process. Actually, we don't invest until you've worked with us in a consulting capacity in our accelerator. So an invitation to our investment track, or as we call it, our accelerator, includes us working at extremely reduced rates to come in and start tuning the business to make sure that we can get it right before investment, to represent to our, you know, essentially our fund that we've done the pre-work and that we know the founders respond to our feedback. And all of that is a prerequisite for investment. But it doesn't always solve for the feeling that someone's in your kitchen telling you how to cook. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I'm getting the image of what that guy, very controversial kitchen manager, whatever his name. He's got a TV show, and he goes in and changes people's business around their kitchens.
Gordon Ramsay
around,
and the famous Gordon Ramsay, that's sandwich it. With the pieces of bread up to the chef's head. Oh my God, who can forget that?
Oh.
Look, I that is not what we're here for.
Right.
We're here for collaborative partnership, mentorship, and guidance. And I just respectfully, I think that's the hardest thing, right? To take that in a humble way. But I did it and it turned my business into an enormous success because I was willing to go into a restaurant that I knew nothing about and learn from my general managers. To me, like where you learn from can be anywhere. I learn from my kids every day.
Yeah.
I learn from my husband. I learn from my team. I learned something new on a call today with one of our investors. I just asked him a really straightforward question, like, how do you do X? And he told me, and I was like, oh my God, that's brilliant. You know, I just,
it's amazing what happens when you ask a question.
If you are curious, right? Yeah. And so I would say to anyone who's fearful of taking an investor, have a level of a curiosity and ask a lot of questions, but also take a look in the mirror. Like, are you willing to take feedback? Yeah. Are you willing to have someone have an opinion about how to run your business? Because we are very deferential, but when we have opinions that need to be heard, they need to be heard, right? Part of knowing how to run this.
This came out of your National Restaurant News article of January 2022. And I recognize there are many more recent ones, but this one struck something in this article jumped out at me. It begs this question. What is the number one missed revenue opportunity by a restaurant?
You know, my answer is going to be product development. I mean, I just think that's such an obvious one. You know, one thing the pandemic taught a lot of restaurants is off-premise sales. So selling outside the four walls is incredibly important. So whether you want to think about that as catering or delivery, which are all obviously now considered standard in most restaurants, a lot of restaurants don't know that, but catering has much better profit margins than anything you could sell in the restaurant or in delivery. So I always encourage brands to stand up a catering program and support it. We teach, coach, and train to that through our foundation. But I'm a fierce proponent of product development. There could be some opportunities for you to leverage your recipes and create a separate revenue stream, whether it's retail or wholesale activity, but it creates the ease of operations and standardization in your units too.
How can people find you?
Hey, yeah, we're online at fullcourse.com. You can book a call any day. You just answer a few questions and we give you a calendar for you to pick a time that works for you. We are on all forms of social media as at Full Course Official. And you can find me on LinkedIn as Lauren E. Fernandez.
I'll have all that in the show notes on the podcast site. Go to whatsworkingcam.com. You can find that podcast. Lauren, thank you so much for your time. This has been wonderful.
My pleasure. Anytime.
We'll be back after this break with final comments. You're listening to What's Working. We'll be back.
I'm Joey Mason. For 4 years, my goal has been to produce the best farm-to-table products I'd ever eaten. I've done just that at our on-site USDA facility in Grand Bay, Alabama, allowing us to ship directly to your door. This is true farm-to-table. Visit us at masonhillsfarm.com to see all that we have to offer.
Welcome back to segment five. This is the final segment of every What's Working show where I try to recap a little bit of what I heard, things that stood out to me in our conversation with the guest, and as well as give you some insights into what may be upcoming in forthcoming shows. Lauren unquestionably is an expert in her field, and you couldn't see it because it was a Zoom call, but she was incredibly passionate about the things that she's trying to do, at least. If she wasn't passionate about it, she fakes passion very well on this Zoom call. It was really quite impressive, honestly. There was a lot said when the microphones were off about some of the hazards that can happen when restaurants take on partnerships, for lack of a better term, or when restaurants go through a franchising model. And she and I did not get into that on the show. But there's an opportunity, from what she said, to make some pretty significant decisions about the future of your brand that in hindsight would be poor decisions. One of the things that she also talked about when the microphones were off was that as a female in the industry, she enters essentially the industry with less credibility than males in the industry. And this is something I hear Well, I guess we hear it more today than ever before. And as a male, as a middle-aged Caucasian male, I have no footing to make this argument because we are, me and my people, are often the ones told you have no idea what you're talking about just because who you are. But that many of the females that I talk to seem to truly, truly believe that they fight with one hand behind their back in whatever industry that they're in. And Lauren did discuss a little bit, again, when the microphones were off, about how hard she had to work to get credibility in the industry. And it took her, it wasn't until after her time with those chicken salad chick stores that people began to take her seriously and could consider her a legitimate participant in the industry as well as a qualified operator for the way she started. I think she said with two and finished with eight, something like that, grew them very quickly. And, you know, it's a theme. And I wonder if there's not a show somewhere in this gap between being a female in the workplace or the marketplace or the business place and being a male. And if there's anybody out there qualified to talk about it, because all we know is from our own points of view, our own terms. My wife has mentioned these things in the past that she doesn't feel she's taken seriously in certain business environments, whereas I, for whatever reason, am. And I don't know what to think about it or what to say about it, and sure as heck know not to argue with it because I'm the problem, according to so many people. Anyway, Lauren's got her finger on something that sounds like the marketplace needs, and that's always a good place to be. Upcoming, and I'm not sure if I mentioned this on the last episode or not, we're going to put a previous guest on who has written a book about medicine, technology, and ChatGPT, and he's written it using ChatGPT technology. He not only talks about the potential of this stuff, he actualizes the potential of this stuff in writing about the book. If you're curious about the future of medicine, what doctors are going to look like, behave like, how they're going to get trained, etc., I'm really excited for this episode. That's coming up next week, I think, as the way the schedule looks, it'll be next week. Have a good week, everybody. You're listening to What's Working, and I'm out of here. As you likely know, this show originates as a radio show broadcast across the state of Alabama, and it continues to grow in both radio listeners and market. After it's formatted for radio, we then turn it into this podcast. Please share it with those you think would find it interesting, and subscribe to the podcast on my YouTube page where you can leave messages and your thoughts and your comments, and I'll certainly get back in touch. Finally, if you're a fan of the show, please offer a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You can find my book called What Works on Amazon.com. In it, I highlight the top 10 ideas from the first 200 episodes of the show. Mind you, they're not the top 10 best episodes. They're the top 10 best ideas. Many times the same ideas are brought up again and again by different guests, and we dig into those ideas in such a way that they'll be easily applicable for your business. Simply go to Amazon and enter my name, and you'll find What Works as well as my other books. Chapter titles include How to Find a Niche, Innovation, Building Teams, and so forth. To learn more about the workshops and seminars I offer, go to cammarston.com. There you can view clips of my work, view workshop titles, view my reviews, case studies, customer lists. It's all there. If you'd like a free copy of one of the chapters of my book, enter your email address at the bottom of the homepage at cammarston.com. And from that site, you can email me directly. I always love to hear from you. You'll also find me on social media. Find Cam Marston on all the social media platforms, and you may need to enter the numeral one. There's one other Cam Marston out there, and that numeral one distinguishes me from him from time to time. So if you're unsure if it's me or not, enter that numeral one after my name, and it should do the trick. On a more personal and less professional side, I record weekly commentaries that air across Alabama on Alabama Public Radio twice each day on Fridays called Keeping It Real. They've won statewide and national awards. They're simple observations on the world as it goes on around me, and they're only a few minutes long. They're a passion. You can find them on the same podcast app you're using to listen into this. Finally, if you're interested in advertising on this podcast or the radio show, reach out. I've worked hard to cultivate a specific listener, and I can tell you all about them, and I have many different options for helping you reach them. Thanks again for listening. We'll have another episode available soon.